You're listening to the Quince Podcast.
Data and facts which have been collected by the Gaikwad Commission indicate that Marathas are neither socially nor educationally backward. That was just one of the views expressed by a 5-judge constitution bench of the Supreme Court on 5th May when it struck down the Maharashtra State Reservation for Socially and Educationally Backward Classes Act of 2018, also known as SEBC, which extended reservations to the Maratha community in public education and employment in excess of the ceiling limit of 50% fixed by the Apex Court. The Devendra Fadnavis government had in 2018 approved a 16% reservation for the Marathas in jobs and education after statewide protest that ended up increasing the 50% cap on reservation that was set by the Supreme Court, and that's how the matter landed up there. The Maratha community, which constitutes almost 32% of the Maharashtra's population, has historically been a socially and politically dominant class, with 12 out of the 18 chief ministers of the state coming from that community. And over 60% of all the members of the legislative assemblies of Maharashtra have been Marathas since 1962. Which does prompt the question, why is this community seeking reservation in the first place? The Supreme Court's quashing of the Maratha reservation quota also cast a shadow on the Uddhav Thackeray administration, since the Maratha community votes swung the votes for the NCP party in the 2019 assembly elections. Not just that, the Supreme Court now may have led itself to muddled waters, as it is not only challenging past rulings on the excess reservation, but whether it has the power to set any limit on reservations in India. So, to unpack all of these issues, for today's episode, I spoke with Member of Parliament Chhatrapati Sambhaji Raje, who is one of the leaders for the demand of reservation, and also with Smriti Kopikar, a Mumbai-based senior journalist and columnist.
You're tuned in to The Big Story, the podcast where we dissect the headline-making news for you, and I'm your host, Himmat.
So let's first shed light on the elephant in the room. Why is a politically, socially, and economically dominant community in Maharashtra demanding these reservations? Answering this, here is Chhatrapati Sambhaji Raje, a member of parliament from Kolhapur and one of the leaders of the Maratha community.
The fact is, the Maratha, although they are the Kshatriyas, but if you see the Swarajya, which was founded by the Chhatrapati Shivaji Maharaj, was not only of the Marathas, it was of Atrapagadzat and Barabolatita. That includes all the, you know, caste, creed and religion, or everyone put together. So this was one. And this was, you know, for a year from 1630 to 1680. And immediately after 200 years, in the year 1902, his descendant, Chhatrapati Shahu Maharaj of Kolhapur, which, you know, who is my forefather, Chhatrapati Shahu Maharaj of Kolhapur, was the first king in India who gave 50% reservations in Kolhapur state for Bahujan Samaj. Now, previously that word was Atrapagadzat Barabolatidar. Now, the terminology has changed, or the word has changed into a word called Bahujan Samaj. So, Bahujan Samaj includes that 50% reservation which was given, includes SC, ST, OBC, and also the Marathas. Okay, so this is very important. And then later, Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar imbibed the same thing in the constitution. That is why you can see 50% check. What you see today. So this is the general background. Now, what has happened in this last 50-60 years after the independence is, the Maratha, who had around maybe 20 acres per family, you know, they used to feel we are noble families, we don't require reservation, we are the warrior caste. Yeah. Now, why do we need reservations? Mm-hmm. Now, what has happened is a family who had maybe 20 acres, because of the increase in population, increase in their households, it has come to maybe not even 1 acre left within one family. With the rich, filthy Marathas, there are like the politicians, like the MLAs, MPs, they are filthy rich. But there is also 75 to 80% poor Marathas. So, now, because of the reservations for the SC, ST and OBC, they have moved two generations ahead. Whereas the Marathas, the poor Marathas are in fact going, instead of going above or going in a higher graph, they have moved downwards. So the per capita income of the Marathas is far below than what you generally see. So you can't compare the filthy rich Marathas or the rich Marathas with this poor Marathas. Okay. My role was to get everybody under one banner, which Chhatrapati Shahu Maharaj got them in 1902. So if you see, even now, if you go to, there are four divisions in Maharashtra, you know, Marathwada, Khandesh, Vidarbha, Western Maharashtra. Now you go to Marathwada, the Dalit, who is a part of Bahujan Samaj, Dalits and Marathas don't talk. They don't look at each other. This is not what Shahu Maharaj had promised. This is, or was had the inclination of getting Bahujan Samaj together. This is not what Dr. Babasaheb wanted. So if you have to see that adversity, you know, comes down. If you have to see what jati ki vishamta kam honi chahiye, so then everybody should be given reservation.
Now, sensing the agitation among the Maratha community, the ruling BJP government, led by then Chief Minister Devendra Fadnavis, set up a 11-member commission headed by retired Justice N.G. Gaikwad in June 2017. The commission conducted a detailed study which also included observations from people who were against the reservation, and then submitted a report stating that the community should be given a reservation under SEBC. And in November 2018, the legislation was passed with unanimous support from the opposition parties, which are Congress and NCP. However, the act met several hurdles over the years. The first in 2019, when a PIL was filed in the Bombay High Court, which, while upholding the law, directed the state government to bring down the reservation to 12% for education and 13% for jobs. And this, as I mentioned earlier, exceeded the reservation cap of 50%, leading to it landing under the scope of the Supreme Court. Now, the part of the reservation exceeding 50% is the heart of the entire debate and the SC ruling. The Maratha reservation was passed under the purview of the Indira Soni versus Union of India case of 1992, where a 9-judge Supreme Court bench had ruled that only extraordinary circumstances would justify the grant of reservation in excess of the 50% ceiling. And on Wednesday, the 5-judge bench found no extraordinary circumstances to grant reservation to the Maratha community over and above the 50% ceiling, as explained in Indira Soni, which has now opened the Pandora's box of reservations quota in India, since multiple states like Tamil Nadu have reservations exceeding 50%. So, does the Maratha community accept the Supreme Court ruling? Mr. Rajay Vazan.
It's a very simple equation. See, I'm not a learned judiciary person, but what I can generally see because of my, you know, social movement last from 2007, what the Supreme Court has given the verdict is a verdict. It's a final verdict. You can't challenge the final verdict. So we respect the final verdict. But my few questions are, you know, why? How come then you give 50% reservations to the other states? Because you say there is no extraordinary situation which has arose in Maharashtra. Yes, there it has. But now they don't believe it has come. So the, you can't touch Indira Soni. You can't refer Indira Soni because that extraordinary situation has not come in Maharashtra. But then the backward commission which has been formed in Maharashtra, they have proved it and given it to the Supreme Court. But it is very simple. If Tamil Nadu can give, if Andhra can give, if various states in India can give, almost 25 states in India have crossed 50% reservation, why then a special law for them, and why not a special, why Maharashtra is sidelined? They were also called and, you know, told to give the comments. Everybody has said, no, one must give. Seeing these presence, seeing the situation in Maharashtra, what has happened is only the 30% who are rich is sidelining the 70%. This is our only appeal to the Supreme Court. You have not seen that poor 70% people, poor 70% Marathas.
While the ruling has sown dissatisfaction among the Maratha community, what the ruling also translated to is a major political blow for the Uddhav Thackeray government, which has been dealing with one crisis after another, from COVID to Arnab Goswami's arrest, and the latest being the Ambani bomb scare case. And given that the Maratha community forms a crucial vote bank during the elections, overcoming this legal challenge might be a primary task for the MVA. So, what is next for the ruling state government in regards to the judgment in appeasing the agitated community? Smriti Kopikar, a Mumbai-based senior journalist, weighs in on what the state government can do or is likely to do.
Well, yes, the Maratha vote is crucial. Not just it was not crucial just in 2019. Maratha vote is always crucial in Maharashtra because the community forms about 31% of the total population. So that's one third of the state. And a number of politicians across political parties, but especially so in the Congress and the Nationalist Congress Party, both of whom are in the government, come from the Maratha community or have the Maratha background. Having said that, the response of the Uddhav Thackeray government is now likely to be at several levels. The first level, which it is exploring, according to what I'm told, is a proper, thorough legal response to the Supreme Court judgment. And in this, it's being pressurized to an extent by the Maratha community organizations, which had organized those large, massive Morchas in 2017-18. They would like a review petition. Ideally, they would like a review petition to be filed by the government. But failing that, the organizations, the community leaders are exploring ways to file a review petition. So I think that ball is going to be in the play for a while now. But that's a legal response. There are two other levels of responses. One is that there is an immediate fallout of the SC judgment, and that is in the anger and the outrage, the sense of disappointment in the Maratha community, especially amongst its youth, which seems to believe that they've been at this issue for a number of years now. In fact, the issue has been on the boil for a number of decades. So they believe that had the government done a little more work, maybe, just maybe, there was a chance that the Supreme Court would have upheld the High Court judgment on this. However, that is open to question because the Supreme Court was really looking at the 50% limit. It was looking at whether Marathas are really a backward community or not, and so on and so forth. And then, of course, it weighed this demand against the right to equality and so on. So maybe even if the government's lawyers had gone a notch stronger in their arguments, it's really open to question whether the Supreme Court's judgment would have been any different. So what really happens now is that the community, especially its youth, is very restive. It wants a solution. It wanted a solution. It wants a solution. It didn't get it from the Supreme Court. So it is going to find expression in some way. And the expectation is that there will be more morchas. There could be law and order issues, which could send the government into some sort of a crisis mode. That's the second level. But that's at the law and order level, it's for the government machinery really to take care of that issue. It doesn't address the reservation issue, that is the essential core. The third level is that beyond the legal and the contortions that have come up in the legal sphere, there are non-legal recourses and responses that the government can evolve. And I'm given to understand that the MVA government had already begun doing that in September last year when the Supreme Court put the quota law on hold. That includes scholarships and concessions for the Maratha community. It includes provisions for financial assistance to entrepreneurs, so on and so forth. What I think likely is all of those non-legal responses will now be looked at very, very seriously. The allocations will be carried through, and it's quite likely that the government might say, look, this is not in our hands, right? The Supreme Court did what it had to do. It's not in our hands anymore, but this is what is in our hands, and this is what we're going to give to you, and hope that that pacifies the community to a certain extent.
After the ruling was passed, expectedly, the BJP party in the state has descended over the Uddhav Thackeray government, accusing it for failing to convince the Supreme Court and for failing the Maratha community. As we stated earlier, it was the BJP state government that led the commission report and directed state resources to ensure the reservation goes through smoothly. And now the ball is again in the BJP's court, since it can now rally the vote back and use it as a political weapon in the next elections. The BJP has another ace in the hands, with the party also ruling the centre. The Supreme Court in its ruling stated that only the centre can identify the SEBC for reservation after the 29th Amendment of the Indian Constitution. So the question is, will the BJP state government now ask the Prime Minister to step into battle? Smriti Kopikar weighs in.
See, the BJP is actually playing it both ways. Mr. Devendra Fadnavis, as Chief Minister, did what he could. He put a lot of state apparatus and might behind this issue, got the law drafted, got the Gaikwad Commission report, wove it into the act and all of that. So he's put a lot of himself and his political credibility on this issue. Also because he himself is a Brahmin, and he was often accused of not being sensitive enough to the Maratha community. And of course, as a BJP's politician, frontline politician, he cannot afford to ignore the Maratha. So he went a little overboard, putting the state apparatus behind solving this issue. It's very clearly the path that Mr. Fadnavis took at that time in 2018-19 has come to a sort of a cul-de-sac right now, right? The law is, the Supreme Court has very clearly said, is not going to hold. So typically, Mr. Fadnavis is blaming the MVA government for not being strong enough in the Supreme Court to argue its case and to convince the court the need for that law. But he and the BJP and literally most people in this, most key players in this issue are aware that after the Narendra Modi government passed the 102nd constitutional amendment, the power to determine backwardness of communities and therefore give reservations to these communities does not lie with the states anymore in India. It is now an issue for the center. The BJP will now lob the ball to the center and say, Modi ji, please do this for Maharashtra. But of course, Modi ji will do it because it is within his domain to do this. And the BJP will likely get its political capital out of it. And it suits the MVA at this point because, as Mr. Thackeray said the other evening, things are not in my hands anymore. They are with the Prime Minister, and I'm going to write to the Prime Minister and speak to him and go meet him if necessary. So he escapes a portion of the blame for not getting this act through by lobbing the ball into the center's court, right? So it suits everybody very well now in Maharashtra that if this issue has to be decided, it can only be done at the center. If the Modi government does this, actually manages to do it, it will become political capital for the BJP to cash in the next election. But having said that, it's not easy for the central government either to do this. Because then if they're doing this for Maharashtra, why won't they do it for other states? Because there are similar demands from many other states, right? So it could just open up Pandora's box. So I think the issue is, politically speaking, very tantalizingly poised. And it's almost like a chessboard. It's great. It's greatly exciting to watch who's going to make the next move and in what direction.
Over 10 days, other than challenging the Andhra Soni case, the Supreme Court also found itself muddling in many more constitutional issues which have widespread consequences. This ruling may now be contested in states where the reservations already exceed the 50% cap. The ruling also challenges the findings of the Gaikwad Commission report, which showcased that a large part of the community is socially and economically vulnerable. The Commission's findings were based on public meetings and grassroots interactions conducted by experts and institutions with 1.93 lakh representatives, including individuals, gram panchayats, public representatives, and organizations. Here is one of the key findings of that report. It found that 93% of Maratha families had an annual income of Rs. 1 lakh, and that 37.38% of families were below the poverty line, against the state average of 24.2%. And importantly, 71% owned less than 2.5 acres of land. However, the Supreme Court bench in its ruling stated that the Gaikwad Commission did not articulate any exceptional circumstances to justify the excess quota. Smriti Kopikar unpacks the significance and the consequences of this ruling, which, according to her, do not limit just to the Maratha community, but the country at large.
As a current affairs person and political reporter, writer, what I can say is that this judgment has ground level implications across India, not just in Maharashtra, for two reasons. One is the first reasoning offered to strike down the law was the 50% cap. And as you yourself said, there are so many other states. Congress leaders in Maharashtra counted 15 to 16 other states in India that have reservations exceeding 50%. If this law was struck down on the grounds that it crossed the 50% limit, then how come other states are allowed to keep their reservations that go up to even 68%. That's a huge, huge question that the judgment has opened up, but not answered, right? And well, it can always say that that part was not before the bench, right? It was not before the bench to look at other states which exceed 50. It was about this law, and this law exceeded 50, so the court shot it down. Fair enough. But the legal point in this may be limited, but it has enormous political implications, because this is now going to be taken up state after state after state, because there are MPs from Tamil Nadu who are already exhorting their government to say, their new government, to study the Maharashtra judgment, Maratha judgment, and see if Tamil Nadu wants to come in on that and appeal against it, because this can, going forward, affect Tamil Nadu as well, or any other state, right? So it's actually opened up a huge, huge area, and that question is not going to be settled very easily. That's a pan-India question. And therefore, you know, I think the judgment is, in that sense, leaving us with more questions than answers. That's number one. Number two is the 10% EWS quota that the Narendra Modi government put forth. What happens to that? Because if you include that quota, then it's quite likely that reservations go beyond 50%. So, Does that quota now come under scrutiny? Will it be scrapped? Will it be reworked? Again, at this level, more questions than answers. And on the Maharashtra front, I'm really struck by the dissonance between what we found on the ground and what the court, the bench, the esteemed bench said yesterday. The bench said that there were no extraordinary circumstances to grant the quota law, right? This flies in the face of the Gaikwad Commission report. The Gaikwad Commission was a 9-member commission, which took a few years to compile its report, went across Maharashtra, including to the remotest areas, and spoke to nearly 2 lakh representatives of people, communities, organizations, elected officials, public officials, and a host of people, including taking objections on board. So non-Marathas came to Gaikwad Commission to argue why Marathas are not a socially or a educationally backward community. And the Gaikwad Commission took all of this on board and then reached the conclusion which it did, which said that there are reasons to believe that a large sections of this community are backward. There is a blow. They have taken a blow to their self-esteem. And there are figures here. They are not just making vacuous statements. The commission is not making just vacuous statements. They've given figures to show that the Marathas, that among the Marathas, more than 35% are below the poverty line, whereas the state average is 24. It speaks of other data such as literacy, land holding, and so on and so forth. So it went through a lot of area. It covered a large area, a large ground, to show with empirical evidence how and why a large section of the Maratha community could be considered backward. Is the Supreme Court trying to say that all of that is false, or the commission report is a lie, or what the commission saw on the ground was a lie? So, you know, and the Supreme Court's judgment really now casts a huge shadow on the findings of the commission. So either the commission was correct in its assessment, and there is reason to believe that it was, because it spent time and it spoke to a huge number of people before it came to conclusion, or the Supreme Court is correct in its assessment that the Marathas are not a backward community. Both cannot be right. And therefore, it's opened up a huge area of debate in Maharashtra, according to me, which is not going to be settled very easily. The truth really is that the Marathas are a politically visible, socially dominant, economically powerful community because, and therefore not a backward community, because a very small elite is that. Whereas there is a large mass of Maratha community which could do with some sort of state support or reservations or affirmative actions or something. Because large masses of the Maratha community are not politically powerful, are not socially endowed or economically well off. And this is the conundrum, that the Maratha community is not one homogeneous community, and it depends which end of the spectrum you are seeing The Gaikwad Commission was seeing the lower end, the other end of the spectrum, whereas the Supreme Court was probably looking at another end, right? And both are true, and one doesn't actually cancel out the other, though on the face of it, they seem contradictory. So if we accept that these are that there are two divisions or sections within the larger Maratha community, a small elite, special class, if you can call it that, and a large mass, then it's very clear that the special class or the elites have enjoyed power, the fruits of power and everything, and they are not the ones agitating for reservation. It's the masses that are agitating for reservations, and the masses are not as well off as what appears to be at the top of the pile. You know, and this is really the conundrum, and there is no way of getting around this other than state support. There cannot be a legal solution to this. Right. This needs a socio-political solution. And who are these socio-political people who can put solutions on the table, debate and take decisions? Many of them are the very powerful Maratha politicians themselves. So it suits them very well to lob this ball in the Supreme Court and say, look, if you guys and if we, the community, didn't get what we wanted, it's because of the Supreme Court. Whereas that's partial truth. The complete truth is, if they really want their community to make progress, then they already have a fairly good share of the pie on the table, and they can share their piece of the pie with the Maratha masses, right? Which they are unwilling to do. And that is really at the heart of the political tension.
A Pandora's box has been opened by the Supreme Court, and the political chessboard is now set. What remains to be seen is who will be playing the opening move.
If you liked listening to this episode, please subscribe to The Big Story for episodic updates. We're available on Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, JioSaavn, and most of the other popular podcast streaming platforms. For other podcasts, please log on to the Quint website, and for any feedback, please shoot an email to podcast@thequint.com.
Thanks for listening. Log on to the Quint website and check out our other podcasts.